You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Welcome to OMG, the Mara Gale Radio Show. I'm your host, Mara Gale, actress, author, evangelist, and producer of the docudramedy STEM the Movement. And you know what I love to do? I love to help people see things differently. I enjoy when a perspective is widened, when views are enlarged, because the more angles you have of a situation, the better the vantage point. I've been blessed with experiences in all sorts of areas, and I believe in my heart and soul that we all live and learn in order to share and teach. I love serving Maravation. It's a perfect blend of motivation and inspiration. I believe some of the greatest people in the world are only one word of encouragement away from being and doing something meaningful. I think if more people would get outside of themselves and their situations and just look up, call up, or speak up and into the lives of others, we would experience a more productive world around us. And today, for tonight's show, I am so honored to have an author on this conversation that hasn't just written 5 books or 10 books. She is an international author, and this newest release, Midnight After Hour, is her 25th book. Would you be so kind to put your hands together in a virtual fashion and welcome to this phone call and conversation, Yara St. John. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Maura. I appreciate it.
Oh, you are more than welcome. I'm super excited. I've been waiting for this conversation, and I'm so glad that our schedules collided so that we could actually make this opportunity possible. Before we dive into the juicy and wonderfulness of your books and some of the other things that are going on, can you just share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got started in the industry of writing?
Absolutely. My name is Yara St. John, and I am an author with Harlequin. I have been writing for them for approximately 14 years. But I've been writing longer than that since I was 12 years old. And I have 25 books, as you've heard. Miami After Hours is my 25th book. It was recently released June 1st. So I'm really excited to hit such a momentous milestone.
That is awesome. Awesome, awesome. And how did you become published with Harlequin? You say you've been writing with them for 14 years. How did that partnership take place?
It took place when I went to a writer's conference, and I really recommend for any aspiring author, if they've never been to a writer's conference, to have that opportunity to, if they're able to go to one, that would be great. But I was able to go to a writer's conference and meet some of the editors that worked for, at the time it was BET Books before it was purchased by Harlequin. And so I was able to speak with them, pitch my book idea to them, and they were very receptive. And shortly thereafter, I was offered a book deal.
Oh, that is so cool. That is so wonderful. So this newest release, Miami After Hours, you know, I'm kind of curious. You know, our executive producer, Mel D, who greeted you when you came in our virtual green room, She, just like myself and several other people, grew up reading Harlequin novels, romance novels, and it just whisked us away. How did you get into writing romance novels? You said you have been writing longer than the 14 years you've been with them, but were you always interested in writing romance novels, or did you write, bios? I don't know what you were writing before that.
Sure. I actually have been writing since I was 12. I grew up in a very religious background, and I had a lot of free time on my hands because I wasn't going out dating and that sort of thing, or going out to friends' houses and whatnot. And so that helped, help me start to write. I wanted to write about what I wasn't doing. And so it initially started out as kind of like a teen, young adult, if you will, sort of short stories that I was writing for my friends. And it progressed from there because, of course, the Harlequin books started coming out, and I saw them in the 80s, and I was like, ooh, I really love those. So my love of romance started from reading those Harlequin romances even when I was, 15, 16. And I always wanted to see, myself staring on the cover, but you never got to see that. And in 95 or so is when the first African-American romances started coming along, and you were able to see African-American faces on the covers. And so it really led me on the path of, hey, you know what? I want to show that there, can be beautiful Black love out there. And so that's what made me want to decide to write romance.
Oh, that is so cool. So I've got to ask, because, of course, our show is about balancing relationships, business relationships, as well as personal relationships. Are you married?
Absolutely.
I am. How long have you been married?
I have been married for a whole 3 months. It's very, very exciting. I'm a newlywed. And it definitely has taken balance to be able to – I work full-time, as well as I, have my author career, which is part-time. And then, just being now a wife and, a daughter and a friend, so balancing those relationships. And I find that, sometimes you have to kind of turn off your phone. And I find that if I'm able to turn off, after I'm done from working for the day, I can kind of turn off that phone and give myself just a couple of hours in front of a computer. I can usually get out of, a few pages in the evenings, and then, of course, spend a little more time with, with my husband. And so I found that has worked for me over the years, is just, balance, don't overwork too much. It's always going to be there, but you only have one life to live. And so you, have to make sure that, you make time for life and love and health and family.
So, in other words, minimize the distractions so that you can focus on the important things.
Absolutely. Sometimes you have to turn off the social media and the Facebooks and Twitters. Not that I don't love them, and I do. I love all my fans. But, I have to turn off those distractions. Otherwise, I'd never, write, when you need 55,000 words, you definitely have to turn off the phone and just take a little break.
So do you make sure that every single day you write, you do put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard every single day? Because I call it the battle of resistance, and I try to beat resistance as a writer when I'm sitting up, when I know I have some deadlines or some things that I want to put out, I intentionally make myself, sit down and do the craft. Is that what you do, like every single day you write, or would you say, 3 to 5 times a week?
When I'm under deadline, very similar to what you just said, I do find that pretty much every day I have to write. Sometimes you might get a day here and there if you have something going on in the evening, but I do primarily like to try to write every single day. I find I work best on the weekends where I have these large blocks of time, without having children. My stepchildren are grown, so I'm able to take these big blocks of time, 5-6 hours, and I can sit in front of the computer, and that's when I find I do my best work, because I am very focused on the weekend, and I cut out all the distractions, and I find I can do 20 to 30 pages in a weekend day.
Oh wow. Wow, that's pretty awesome. So because you are a newlywed, I am so curious. And if there are people out there right now that like to join the conversation or have questions for our author of 25 books for Yara St. John, please feel free to call in at 347-324-5246, press 1, and we'll enter you into the queue. I'm curious. You've been married for 3 months, and you write romance novels. So had your husband ever read one of your romance novels? And two, did your husband, because, you know, these romance novels are steamy. They are very steamy. And
yes,
so I just
are.
Wonder yes. What the stage setting was like prior to you getting married. I'm sure my listeners are interested to find out what that must have been like.
My husband is a very romantic guy. He has read, you know, a handful of the books. I wouldn't say he's read every single one, because he gets to live the love story with me, right? So, I think maybe he might pick it up a time or two just to get, you know, maybe find out what I'm thinking and what might be romantic for me. But yeah, he's very, you know, he is definitely the reason for some of the inspiration that I get for the romances. And then sometimes too, that inspiration can come just from real life, talking to family and friends, or just even, you know, watching a television show.
Gotcha. I gotcha. So is your personal life, because you did note that he gets to live the love story with you. So is your personal life, does it mirror it? I know you say some of the inspiration comes from him, but do you kind of extract some of the things you've written to actually spice up things? Do you recommend that?
I do. I'm always, even as an author, researching what's the most romantic things to do in a given city or what have you. So I'm always thinking of really interesting things to do, and I put those in my book. So if any of my fans ever notice that, they'll probably notice that I do a lot of research on whatever city I'm in and thinking of what's the most romantic things to do. And so I think he's picked up on that, because we do go out and do things that are, you know, not the norm, you know, and we're very much adventure geeks. So he knows I'll go zip lining or, you know, whitewater rafting as just as well as sitting down to, you know, at a fondue restaurant, you know, feeding each other, you know, chocolate and cheese, you know, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to take a really quick break, Yara, and we'll be back after these announcements. But before we do, I want to remind everyone, this is Yara's 25th book. And on our show page, we'll have a link that'll let you know how you can purchase her book, because she's actually has a setup for you to be able to purchase the book today. And so we're going to let you know about that. We're also under the umbrella of Up to Me Radio, Up to the number 2. Me Radio. You can follow us on all social media channels. We thank you so much. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to OMG, the Omara Gale Show with Mara Gale and Yara St. John.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels, and so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up2magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Welcome back to OMG. I'm your host, Mara Gale, the host of OMG, the Omara Gale Show, and my special guest tonight is none other than Yara St. John. She's an author of 25 books. Her 25th book was just recently released, and it's Miami After Hours, and we're going to share the dish on that a little bit later on in the show, so be sure to stick around. But Yara, I've got a couple more things I'd love to know about. How do you get your ideas for your stories, your characters? Where does the inspiration come from?
As I mentioned before, some of those stories come from real life, and sometimes they can come from like a television show. For example, when I was my book, Taming Her Tycoon, that came out in January, and I have the sequel coming out this November, Taming Her Billionaire. And both of those books came from me watching the show Empire. I'm sure everyone was very familiar with that popular TV show on Fox. And I really loved the kind of brother, especially in the first season, the brother against brother, kind of fighting for the empire to run this company. And so I just decided, hey, I think I want to do kind of a brother against brother, if you will. And so the idea sprung to, you know, have these one, you know, legitimate son, one illegitimate son, and fighting for, you know, their father's company. So my ideas can come from a number of different sorts, different topics. And then sometimes they can come from myself. My first book, One Magic Moment, I would say that's kind of loosely based on myself. They say write what you know. And
yes.
It was more of my story. Yeah.
Gotcha. So when you come up with these titles, like you just mentioned, after you had, you know, you were watching Empire and you got inspired to create Taming Her Tycoon and your newest one that's coming out, I believe you said in the fall, Taming Her Billionaire. Where do you come up with the titles?
Do you get the title before the story? No, not usually. Sometimes the title comes to me. You know, when I did my Heart series, I knew that I wanted the title to have heart in it. So then it was just a more of, okay, well, what are they? They're entangled hearts. They're untamed hearts. They're restless hearts. So I knew I wanted hearts in it. And so the Taming Her Tycoon was more of these are these very strong, you know, alpha men, which I have a tendency to write, maybe from reading all those Harlequin books back in the day. But so I wanted something that the woman, it kind of lends itself to the woman being a little bit in control of this alpha male, that she could tame him. And so I liked that element. And so that's where the idea for those titles came from. But it doesn't always come to me. Sometimes the title comes first. And then the story, and then sometimes the story comes first, and then the title.
You know, it's interesting. I'm a writer myself, and I generally get a title before I put one word on the page. It's as if the title informs me of how I'm going to write what it is that I write. Another kind of a piggyback on that. Does Harlequin give you a time frame to complete the books? Or are you birthing them based on, you know, when you feel moved to write the book?
With my traditionally published through Harlequin, yes, I have a time frame. I'm under a contract. And typically, you know, I usually have between each book like 6 months to write a book.
Oh, okay.
Depending on when the contract was signed. But usually I can finish in 2 to 3 months. Depending on, you know, my personal life and like we've been talking about, finding that balance. So obviously when I was getting married in the earlier part of this year, I didn't have a whole lot of time to write. So I pretty much did minimal writing, you know, January, February, March, as I prepared for the wedding and the honeymoon and all that fun stuff. But, you know, once I got back, it was get back focused. And, you know, I knew I had a contract coming up that I have a book due. And so it was just, you know, making myself write every day and of course, write on those long weekends.
And your books are in print, softback cover, as well as digitally available on all the other sources as well, correct?
That's correct, yes. Through my traditional publisher, it's softback or mass market, as they say, and ebooks. And then also I self-publish as well, in which I go just direct to Amazon. And it's wonderful now that at first Amazon only offered ebooks, but now they're doing soft cover as well. So I'm able to give my fans who might be like me, because I still kind of love the touch of and feel of having a book in my hand.
Me and you both. I have to have it in my hand.
Yeah, I really do. So I miss that. So I really try to still offer that, and I'm just so glad that Amazon is able to do that kind of print on demand and allow us to be able to, you know, give our readers who still want those print books.
So you have traditional publishing through Harlequin, and you self-publish. The self-published titles, they are obviously are different than the ones that are through Harlequin. It's a totally different series, or?
It's a totally different series.
Okay, so is it still romance novels?
Yes, I've done both romance novels under my self-published works, the Heart series that I mentioned. Those were all self-published mm-hmm. works that I did. Uh-huh. But then I also kind of forayed a little bit into women's fiction in my Dirty Laundry book and the subsequent sequel to Dirty Laundry, Can't Get Enough. So I kind of love mm-hmm. women's fiction, too, that kind of chick lit fun book mm-hmm. that you can't put down when you're reading when you go to the beach and you just finish it in a day. Yeah, one of those.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I definitely see myself doing women's fiction, romance, maybe a little romantic suspense. You know, I definitely don't want to pigeonhole myself to just one, though I absolutely love romance and I probably would never stop writing it.
Cool. So now that we're on this, you know, back on the whole romance thing, question for you. The covers of your
sure.
book, they're always so inviting. And do you get an opportunity? Do you control how those Scott Steamy covers are put on the front, or does someone, do you have a team? Is there a team at Harlequin that kind of guides you to do that, or do you get an opportunity to have control over it?
So with my traditionally published works through Harlequin, they have an entire marketing team that comes up with the cover. However, before they do the cover, we kind of fill out an art fact sheet in which we talk about all the main hero and heroine, and you tell them everything, how they look, how they dress. You give important scenes in the book, like a handful of scenes that you think are like the most important in the book, and you know, the location where does the story take place. You know, if there's an important scene, you know, for instance, like my book Lost Without You, the character was in Paris. And I felt that played a big role because, you know, it was this kind of ugly duckling to swan kind of story, and it takes place in Paris.
Yeah.
I thought having the Eiffel Tower in the background in the book was super important. It kind of sets the stage, lets readers know, you know, the book is, you know, has a big, some big moments in Paris. And so so the marketing team of Harlequin will, you know, kind of put the whole idea together. And they'll ask my input once they have a draft of a cover and say, hey, what do you think? You know, do you have any changes, any tweaks? And so I have the opportunity then to, you know, provide some input. But when I do my own self-published work, complete control of how the cover looks and whatever vision that I have in my mind, I have a graphic designer who is able to put that together for me.
Oh, it's always great to have a graphics designer in your pocket that actually can catch your vision, run with it, and then you see
absolutely.
It and go, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
I absolutely
he is fantastic.
That.
He can just read. He seems sometimes to read my mind like, yes, that's it. You know, Eureka. You know. So.
That's so cool. All right, so. This, I know you've heard this question probably 1,000 times, but with 25 titles, I've got to ask, of all of your books, which is your favorite? And why?
Yes. the easy answer would be, my first book. And of course, your first book is always going to have a special place in your heart because it helped me get published. But if I had to say one of my favorites, it would be I think it's number 13. Start to lose count once you write so many. It was called A Chance With You, and that book won an award. It won a Reviewer's Choice Award by RT Book Reviews Magazine. And I really liked that book because we had these two characters, this sports agent who had been in a car accident and his brother passed away, but the brother had a child that he didn't know about. And on the other side, the heroine, her sister, the child's mother, dies from cancer. So then these two people are thrown together and fall in love despite all the tragedy in their life as they're falling in love and trying to raise their niece. So I really like that story, and I think it resonated, which is probably why it won the Reviewer's Choice Award.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Well, speaking of that particular story, have you personally had any mountainous obstacles that you've had to overcome that were just so, you know, so magnanimous that at one point or another you just weren't sure you were going to do it, meaning either it took you off your game of writing or it just
cause you to maybe question if relationships were in your future in terms of real relationships, or there may have been some setback when you were growing up that triggered some things along the way. Have you incurred anything like that or experienced a relationship like that or a situation that kind of just really took your breath away, took you off, you know, knocked you off balance? Because that's important. I think that, you know, most of us go through challenges that end up later. We can look back and say, wow, I grew leaps and bounds from that. But in the middle of it, it was, you know, devastating, overwhelming, and it could almost feel as if you were suffocating. Have you ever had anything like that transpire in your life?
I have, Maura. I lost my mom in 2005, right at the cusp of when I was becoming a published author. And it was really,
sorry,
really
devastating. Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And so it was very devastating to lose her. She was my best friend. She was an avid reader like me. She was the one who told me to cut the first 50 pages in my first book. So because she thought, you know, it needed to be tighter. And she was right, because I got published after that. But losing her really set me back. I didn't want to write. I couldn't write. There was a mental block. And I think anyone who experiences grief, you kind of have to go through those four stages. And, you know, there's guilt and so forth. And so I actually ended up not being able at the time to meet my deadline. As I mentioned, when you have, you know, when my contract with Harlequin, you have a deadline. And I wasn't able to meet my deadline. So it actually postponed my book for almost a year. And I began to wonder if I, you know, did I miss my opportunity? Am I, you know, are they going to keep me on contract? But, you know, I did eventually, you know, over time, slowly the grief lessened and my heart opened again. And I was able to finally write and finish that third book. And finally got out there and yeah, there have been challenges, you know, even just, you know, being a author with Harlequin, you know, the ups and downs of publishing, you know, you sometimes lose an editor who might have absolute faith in you, and you gain a new one who may not know your work. And so there can be some highs and lows, but I've always just never wanted to give up. That's the one thing my mom always taught me: don't give up. And so I've always just kept persevering, and I'm proud that I've been able to achieve 25, because it's due to, you know, my mom and my upbringing teaching me to never give up on yourself.
That's awesome. So, you know, you spoke mountains in that, because I think that's the heart of a lot of our listeners. You know, when an obstacle or a challenge comes, we're trying to figure out, how do we move past it? You know, for some of us, it may be, you know, the difficult thing may be just remembering to brush our teeth when you wake up, or just remembering to breathe. Because, you know, when you said your mom was your, you know, she was like your number one cheerleader. She was that person for you, an avid reader and all of those things. So, you know, being able to forge past that and do it as a, I'm sure, as an honor to her, you know, honoring her memory, honoring the seeds that she planted in you. I'm sure those are the kinds of tips and nuggets that our listeners are trying to look for, because, you know, sometimes, you know, life just throws you a curveball. You know, right when you think you're on the rise or about to do something amazing, you know, then comes life. And life isn't always pretty, and it's not always neat. And so to know that you were on the precipice of this new contract with Harlequin, and deadlines, you know, were being missed because you needed personal grief time. You needed your own space to take in and house what you were processing. But I still know God always has a ram in the bush, you know? And so that delay was still okay. It was delayed, but look at where you are now, you know, and 25 books later, you've got a huge testimony, and I'm sure you view your mom's wings as the wind beneath you, you know, that's actually helping
they
you
certainly
to
are.
Continue to soar.
They certainly
that's
are.
Awesome.
I believe that.
That's absolutely awesome. Well, we're going to take a real short break here, and then when we come back, we're going to share some tips with our listeners on how they too could possibly be published or how they could continue to pursue it. You're listening to OMG, the Omara Gale Show. I'm your host, Mara Gale. And of course, our special guest tonight is none other than Yara St. John, and she's the author of 25 books. Her newest book is Miami After Hours. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you.
1 in 6 seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to OMG. I'm your host, Mara Gale, and I'm with, of course, none other than Yara St. John. And she's just shared a wonderful, heartfelt moment, and she was able to continue to forge forward after the loss of her mom. And it was her mom that seeded into her at a young age and was an avid reader, and who also cut the first 50 pages from your first book to tighten up the story. I think those kinds of tips are exactly what our listeners need to hear. If you're a writer out there, this next question is for you. What kind of tips do you have, sort of like that one, you know, if the story isn't flowing fast enough or getting to where you desire the direction that you want the story to go in, how your mom shared with you to cut in or shorten it up by cutting 50 pages, what kind of tips would you share with some new writers who perhaps maybe they have writer's block? So let's start with the writer's block. If they have writer's blocks, what are some of the tools and tips you can possibly share with them to be able to kind of get the thoughts flowing again?
I find when I have writer's block that actually reading other people's work, typically in my genre, so I will, you know, gorge out on, you know, 5 or 10. I'm a fast reader, so I can, you know, read 5 or 10 books. And I may even go back to my Harlequin books or my Kamani romance books. You know, I support my African-American romance authors. And I'll go through and read, you know, half a dozen. And seeing how they write usually will spark some creativity on my side.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might even, you know, watch one of my, you know, wonderful romances like Pretty Woman or Love Jones or something like that to stimulate the mind, because I love a good, you know, rom-com or romantic drama. So that's usually how I'm able to get rid of writer's block.
So you guys heard that, kind of dive into some other people's works, read some other authors that write in your genre, and or watch some television shows or films, I should say, that kind of jog your memory or kind of kickstart you into the direction you may want to go. So Yara, have you ever been discouraged in this journey? I mean, with 25 books, have you ever just come up against a wall and you're like, I don't know, maybe not at this point, of course, but early on, possibly in your writing career, were you ever discouraged? Did you second guess your gift or talent? I mean, you don't come out the womb going, I'm going to write 25 books and I'm going to sell them and everybody's going to buy them and I'm going to sign with Harlequin. So what was it like for you, and when did you make the turn, if you were ever, you know, at the place that you maybe second-guessed your work, or perhaps someone, you know, told you you couldn't write? And generally it's those kinds of comments that fuel us to actually go on to do amazing, you know, things, because someone's no is just the fuel we needed to say, I'm going to do it to prove you wrong. So have you ever been discouraged in your gift and you know, or second guessed it?
Actually, both of those. I actually have two separate stories. When I was in college at Northwestern and I was majoring in English with a minor in creative writing, I had a professor who told me that I couldn't write. She told me I didn't. Yeah. And she really is like, oh, I really think you should be looking elsewhere. This isn't for you. And so it did. It discouraged me for a long time. And that's perhaps why, you know, between, the 6 or 7 years it took me to finally write a full-length book, because hearing that I couldn't write and seeing my stories come back marked up in red, you know, that she didn't think I had any talent. So definitely. But I always knew that deep down there was something. I had a gift, and I had to block out all that negativity and focus on what I believe to be true, which is what is that, you know, I've been doing this for years. I was writing since I was 12. I know I have something. And so I was happy. I'm happy that I didn't listen to her and I did write that first book. But even after I had written the first book, I think I mentioned that sometime early, you know, in the early part of the millennium, in the 2000s, whatever, the only way to get published was primarily through traditional publishing, having a New York publishing house. And so right. Sometimes you would lose an editor. So the editor who discovered me didn't stay after I left Harlequin. So after, you know, a few books in, I get a new editor. That new editor didn't discover me. So they're not as equally as passionate as for my talent,
right.
if you will. And so in those early days, I did. I was discouraged, like, hey, I'm only getting one book out a year. And, you know, there were a couple of years I only got one book out a year. So I was super excited when self-publishing came around, because then it wasn't the only avenue for you to, you know, get your work out there to the world. But there were times, there have been times that I've been discouraged. But and sometimes, you know, you might give into it for a little bit, but I never have for too long. So I will say that, never for too long. I always somehow, like a phoenix, rise from the ashes.
Love it. Love it. So with your critics, do you did your critics fuel you? Did you have critics that, you know, I mean, I know you talked about your professor who said you weren't, you know, a good writer, but once you got in the market and you were actually publishing, let's say your first book or your first, second or third book, did you have critics that criticized you? And if so, how did you overcome that? How did you prove them wrong?
I didn't have a whole lot of critics. Because yes, your book is going to get reviewed. I think, at the time my editing team, was really quite good. And, you know, I think I took even more time writing those earlier works, but, so I didn't get a whole lot of negative reviews, but, it's not going to be for everything. Your book isn't going to be for everybody. So that's kind of how I had to take, any negative reviews, even if I see it on Amazon. Okay, well, that book wasn't for you. Hopefully you'll like the next one I write. You know, we all have different tastes, and maybe that wasn't for you. So I really try not to let that bring me down, you know.
Okay. So you've been married for a few months now, so you're fresh out of the single scene. How did you stop the roller coaster of relationships, or were you ever on a roller coaster of relationships?
I was. It's funny you should mention that, because I was just telling my husband that, you know, after you get to be a certain age and you're in your late 30s, you're thinking, hey, I'm hanging up. No, I need to hang up the hat. It's not going to happen for me. And, you know, you might have some failed relationships. And right before my husband, I had a failed relationship when I thought on paper, this person was everything that I could ever want. And it didn't work out. And so what I realized, one of the things I did is I'm like, okay, well, I'm throwing out this paper. I'm throwing out this list of who this ideal man is for me. Maybe I just need someone who loves me. All this other material items that are on this list obviously is not working for me. So I'm happy to say I threw out that list, because I would have never met my wonderful, wonderful husband. But I threw out that list and I found him.
That's excellent. So being in order to stop the roller coaster of relationships would be, if you've got this huge list, to toss it and allow love to find you. Is that your tip takeaway?
That would be my tip takeaway. There's never going to be an ideal person. They're not going to have every item on your checklist. But if they love you, if they're loyal, if they're honest, or they're hardworking, or they're a family person, all those are qualities that you should look for rather than just material things alone. And so, yeah, that's definitely my takeaway is, you know, look for what's in a person's heart first. And you might be surprised that love can find you.
That's beautiful. You know, I used to have this whole statement I would tell my girlfriends who were talking about being single, and I'd say, would you date you? If you sat across the table from you, would you date you? Because, you know, what would happen is I'd inevitably hear women say, oh, I want him to be 6 foot, blah, blah, blah. I want him to have a size 34 waist. I want him to make six figures. I want him to drive this kind of car. And I want him to have much in his bank account. And I would say to them, okay, so you sit across from you. Do you have that? Are you the perfect height for your weight? Are you the perfect size? Are you driving the perfect car? Do you have a savings account? Are you? And once I would do it, they would always call me Killjoy. They'd say, what are you doing? And I was like, because you're being unrealistic. You know, I am an extremely real person, and I love the fact that I bleed red blood and that I don't walk on water. And I love the fact that when I show up in a relationship, friendships as well as romantic, I show up being authentically me. I don't make any excuses about it. I don't put on airs. I don't pretend to be someone that I am not, because I act for a living. I don't act in life. And so I'm sure as an author of romance novels, you've kind of had to walk into a room where you've had a certain persona that had to be there when you're in business meetings versus when you met your husband. You know, I'm sure you allowed him to see the real Yara St. John, or whatever your real name may be, if Yara St. John is it. I forgot to ask you that. Is that your real name, or is that a pen name?
No, that's my pen name. Yes.
Okay, I thought so. I was like, that's probably your pen name. It just kind of came to me as we were talking. But I'm sure he met the real you. You didn't walk in saying, hey, I'm Yara St. John. Or if he met you in that, I'm sure shortly thereafter, you filled him in on who you really were, and you allowed him to
see
the real you and not woman in this book, you know, that's got it all, you know, figured out and has the fabulous wardrobe and the fabulous home to prove it. So I always find that interesting. That's a great nugget, a great tip for those that are listening. You know, I remember in my 20s having a list of all the things that I needed my significant other to come with. And I remember maturing.
I was just as guilty.
And I actually tossed the list early on. And I didn't toss the list because there weren't, guys that were around that looked, like you said, perfect on paper. I tossed the list because I thought, wait a minute, this is so superficial. It was so superficial. And when I would have conversations with those guys who met the list of requirements, it didn't move me. It wasn't jazz to me. You know, it didn't make songs in my heart sing. It was just, it would look good on paper. We'd look good walking in a room, or we'd look good if somebody talked about us showing up, which is never a real thing, but I digress. I'd like to know what you're working on now. What are you working on right now? You have anything in the pipes?
I do. I'm actually already working on my 2018 books, book, a new series called Her San Diego Sweetheart. It's going to be a part of a series that I'm working on with two other authors about this millionaire moguls organization. And it's an organization of black men that give back to the community, but they each have their own interesting story and how they fall in love. And my hero happens to be a Navy officer and surfer. So I'm learning everything I can about surfing. Maybe I'll even give it a whirl, being the adventure girl that I am. So I'm really excited to work on this book. It's going to come out next spring.
Oh, yay. So you said that's your 2018 book?
And in 2017, I have two new items that are going to come out. I have I'm part of a 12-episode serial that's going to be online with 11 other Harlequin authors of a variety of romance genres. And we're writing this kind of dynasty-esque romance series about this family. And so I'm writing episode 7. And so that's going to come out in the fall, as well as the book I mentioned before, Taming Her Billionaire. It's the sequel that I'm writing. So I've got a lot on my plate. Two books this year and one I'm already working on for next year.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. So why don't you take a few moments and give us a little sneak peek about your current book, the one you just released, The Miami After Hours. Can you tell us a little bit about it, or would you like to read an excerpt from it?
Oh, I didn't think I could read an excerpt from it, so I didn't have that readily available. But I can tell
That's
you,
okay.
Miami After Hours is about, it's actually the first book in this kind of millionaire moguls series that I mentioned about men who give to the community. But the first series is going to take place in Miami. And as I mentioned, my next one next year will be in San Diego. But Miami After Hours, Daniel Cobb, he is a real estate mogul. And he is suffering over the heartbreak of his first love, Maya, who passed away in a car accident. So he can't find love. And so he's just, you know, dating and looking at the superficial. And just not digging deeper. And then he ends up getting an employee that he mentors, and that relationship turns from, you know, professional to romantic. And but he's finding it hard to let go of the past and let that love in that we've been talking about. So it takes him potentially losing her for him to, you know, finally realize that he's got to let go of the past. He's got to talk about it, let those feelings out before he can, you know, really let that love in. So I'm really super excited about Miami After Hours, and I'm actually going to be hosting a launch party next week in Miami.
Where? Give us the details.
It's through my association called ICBA, which is the International Career and Business Alliance, and they are hosting it in South Florida next Thursday, June 15th, from 6 to 8 p.m., and I'll be showcasing my book along with several other authors that are participating in the author reception, and what I like about that organization of ICBA is that they are dedicated to building relationships and empowering professionals and entrepreneurs of color. So I totally appreciate them, you know, supporting me, you know, in this venture and in my 25th book.
Neat. So has it been a challenge for you writing? I know that you said once Harlequin started, you saw an African-American or African-Americans writing for Harlequin, you then knew, oh, wow, I could do that. Has it been a challenge for you, being a woman of color, writing romance novels? Because, of course, I'm sure the majority of Harlequin's roster is probably someone other than African-American. So have you found the doors, you have to knock a little bit harder to get in, or
absolutely,
you have to?
You do.
Okay. Yeah,
you do. It's not easy being a woman of color writing romance, and you know, I find you have to work a little harder, and knock a little louder. But I think also that having self-publishing out there as a vehicle for us to still get our voices heard has been tremendous in the industry and for African American authors, because before, when those doors were closed, especially in the 1990s, when, you know, authors like Brenda Jackson or Worshia Ehlers were trying to, you know, go through that door, they weren't getting a lot of traction. And now they did open a door for us to walk through, but it has narrowed over as the years have progressed, as traditional publishing has been struggling in the face of ebooks. So that door has, you know, closed somewhat. So it's really difficult. You have to, you know, be the best writer you can be by working on your craft, you know, networking with other authors, and just constantly, you know, writing and putting out your best work, because, you know, those traditional publishing opportunities may not always be there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, is your self-publishing as lucrative for you as the traditional publishing? Or, because, you know, I tell people all the time, authors sell books. Books don't sell themselves. So whether you're with a traditional publishing company or if you're self-publishing, you still have to do the work. You know, you still have to go in the trenches, market, promote, be seen, let people know you're there. So has one caught up to the other, or would you say, you know, by self-publishing, because that's where all of my titles are, that you've been able to, you know, finance your life, or at least make a decent enough living that you can, you know, just do that?
I still, self-publishing is the most lucrative over traditional publishing.
Okay.
for me. I think what traditional mm-hmm. publishing gives you is a wider audience. It can get it also. I mean, yes, people can buy your books from other countries and so forth, but that distribution arm and some of the marketing opportunities of different stores that they can get you into is greater. But as far as like the actual funds you receive, definitely self-publishing can be very lucrative. But what's interesting, what I would say to any new author, if they think that, like you said, you don't have to put in the time, you do, because it isn't just about writing your book anymore. You know, I think
right.
in those early days when I first became published, I thought, hey, I write a good book. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
the publisher will just take care of the rest. Well, no. In this day and age, it's completely changed. You know, readers want to see you, touch you, feel you. They want you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You know, they and they, you know, want you reaching out to them, even if they don't. You may not be doing book signings and everything as much as you used to, but going to conferences, doing little socials, or doing some sort of event to, you know, kind of touch your readers. They like that. You know, having contests. I mean, like you said, you have to market your and advertise, because you know the author is going to sell the book.
That's very true. So if you're listening and you have questions or you'd like to make some comments on tonight's show, the phone number is 347-324-5246. The number again is 347-324-5246. If you have questions, we're going to accept calls for the next couple of minutes. And if not, we're going to continue on forward. What I'd love to know from you, Yara, is what are some of your hobbies or activities, some of the things you like to do outside of writing?
Outside of writing, I am a huge gourmet cook, and I think, and that's even before I met my husband, who happens to be a chef as well. My mom was a soul food cook, and so I enjoyed eating her. But then when the Food Network really became huge, I started, you know, watching shows religiously and found I enjoyed trying my hand at some of the, you know, recipes that I would see, you know, on television or online. So cooking is one of my favorite hobbies, and now it's something that I get to share with my husband. So it's a whole lot of fun.
It's doubly delicious.
Exactly.
It's doubly delicious. Yes. And then you mix in the romance novel writing and the concepts and creations you could come up with. I'm sure it's doubly delicious.
It totally is.
So,
totally.
Before we wrap up the show, I generally usually ask if there's any advice that you'd like to leave our listeners with, or wannabe authors. Is there any advice you'd like to leave our wannabe authors with?
Absolutely. I would leave them the advice of making sure, you know, you stay current and what's going on in the marketplace by reading the authors that are writing in the genre that you would like to write in or publish in. I would read up on the craft of writing, about storytelling, plotting, pacing, characterization. That's super important. And some other tips would be to, you know, join writers groups. You'd be surprised that at your local library, or even beyond that, like we have the Romance Writers of America. They have local chapters that you can join. And I'm sure, I think there's a Mystery Writers of America or something like that. But, you know, there's different writers groups that you could join that would be a great asset to you and would help you, you know, network with other authors. They can critique your work. So, you know, not just having family and friends, which is fantastic, you know, you can have, like, you know, my mom tell you to cut the first 50 pages, but having a writers group also, you know, critique your work would be fantastic. And then finally, my last little bit of, you know, advice is I was able to get my book deal. If you want to go the traditional publish route and potentially have a little, you know, get you that fame you're looking for, is going to conferences, and you get that ability to meet someone in person. You can dazzle them with your smile and your personality, as well as pitch your book to them and tell them why they should buy your book. So I can't say enough about going to conferences.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So when you first published your book, before Harlequin, you self-published, correct?
No, I was started out traditionally published, and I just added doing self-publishing.
Okay, so when you started the self-publishing, when you added that, I remember you talking about Amazon, they then allowed you to do the soft covers. Did you ever, mm-hmm. did you just do them on demand, or did you ever order about 1,000 up front or a couple of hundred up front?
I've ordered a couple of hundred up front when I wanted to, you know, go to a conference and sell,
uh-huh.
you know, because typically some at conferences you have the ability, there's usually going to be some sort of book fair or
mm-hmm.
that readers can buy your work. For example, in
mm-hmm.
July in Orlando, we've got the big Romance Writers of America conference coming up, and we have the annual Giant Book Fair. And so I will have copies in July of all, you know, of my latest book, Miami After Hours. And I'll have, you know, a couple hundred copies on hand, you know, for readers as they come in and can purchase the book. And so I did some, you know, the same thing, you know, with some of my self-published work. If I knew I was going to a conference around that time, I would order some copies so that I could have readers purchase a print copy so they can feel it and touch it.
Yes. And last, but well, actually next to last, because it's kind of on that same vein, when you've ordered a large amount of books, have you ever looked at them in a room, a garage, a storage, and go, oh, how am I going to, and this would have been early in your career, I'm sure, how am I going to sell all of those? Once you go through family and friend, those 50 people that are like, I'll buy it. Have you ever had that where you're just staring at covers and books in a room going, how am I going to get rid of those? Or since you started traditionally, you know, in a traditional fashion, was that a non-issue for you?
It was a non-issue, but I did have some book signings early on in my career where they would have 100 books and they'd all be sitting there at the bookstore waiting for me. And in the early days, they had Walden Books in the mall, and they would set all the books out, and I'd be right in front as people are walking by in the mall, like, please come
yeah.
over, buy my book.
I know.
You know, so I do remember those days. And it would take me a while, but once I got started, you know, I usually could sell. I don't know if I ever sold all of them, but a couple of times I came pretty darn close.
Awesome. I tell people, hey, you know, those do not despise those humble beginnings. You know, books, of course, do not sell themselves, but I tell them, make sure you have a market and audience when you're trying to put something out, especially in this day and age. We're about to wrap this show up. You have been an amazing guest. I'd love for you to just share your website with our listeners and maybe your handle, the most popular handle that you'd like them to catch up with you, unless they can get it on your website as well.
My website is yarahstjohn.com. That's yarahstjohn.com. And yes, they can follow me. My popular is Facebook and Twitter, but all of that's at the top of my website. So you can go and find me and reach out to me. I'd love to talk to you.
Awesome. Yara St. John, you have been an amazing guest. Thank you so much for your tips, your nuggets, your time. And we celebrate and congratulate you on your 25th title, Miami After Hours. And we look forward to your new titles that are coming out, not just this year, but also the series that you're co-doing with some of the other Harlequin romance authors. So that's our show. My name is Mara Gale. We will be back here next Thursday, same time, same flow, same feeling. Be blessed, be encouraged, and most of all, be you. God bless you.
Everyone likes to be heard and then listened to, so we want you to set your dial to OMG on Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m.